Just first, I wanted to say thank you for the people who found this place. It's so incredible. We've never seen it before. And it was really, really good choice. And it feels very powerful to me. So I'd like to thank Winston and everybody else. I think it's just the first teaching of many, many, many that will happen here. And we're actually in the process of writing the course catalog for 2004 fall. And I think there'll be about 20 different classes going from different teachers. And so this is just sort of a, we call in Tibetan Tendel. Tendel means good luck. Just to start the first class tonight. And it's not even the whole first class of what I'm going to teach this summer. But I thought just to have the good luck of starting it. And several people, including Venerable Jigme Pelmo, and Sharon Gannon, our Holy Lama yoga teacher, had said, why don't you teach us something by Maitreya? And I don't know, just it came together that we decided to try to teach the Uttara Tantra by Maitreya. So I thought tonight to talk about who's Maitreya and who wrote the Uttara Tantra. And then Gail asked me, can you tell me what the Uttara Tantra is about? Because I need to tell people, for it's going to be held in Tucson, I think, in October. We'll have a four-day course, and it'll be a full ACI course. So the reason we're doing Uttara Tantra as an ACI course is partly because of Ted Lemon, who's right there doing a techie stuff. But he said, you're going to teach the higher teachings in starting in 2004 and going for maybe 6 or 7 years to get the whole higher teachings. And I said, yeah, we're going to do that. And then he said, that's great, but what about more open teachings, like sutra teachings? Like, are you just going to have the 18 courses and leave it at that? And he said, you should have like a specialization courses if people want to get deeper into one of the 18 courses. So I thought that was a great idea. And so Uttara Tantra is really, it's a specialization course. And it would go under the Course 15, which is Winston's favorite, which is called, it's mainly about the mind-only school of Buddhism. It's a special school that taught mind-only. And so Uttara Tantra is not a tantra. I think that's the first thing you have to know. Why do you have to know? My idea in October is that in the next 3 months, 4 months, with breaks for going to New York to hear His Holiness and to see Holy Lama Ken Rinpoche and have initiation, the idea is that I will teach Uttara Tantra, the whole course, to you guys. And I think the dates are already set. You can check with Ellie or Winston. Of course, it's starting tonight. And be able to teach half the classes during the course in October, which will take place in Tucson, because I think we'll need a larger place for the time being. So you guys have to work really hard to make good notes, and you have to listen very well. And then starting, I think the first official class is on the 14th of June. We'll have a sort of a strict schedule. You'll have to be studying a lot, doing the homeworks, and doing a little bit of study with another person, which will later develop into debating. And depending on the acoustics, it might be nice to have the debate ground around here, I think, and a garden, I think. And then the retreat areas over there, I guess. But traditionally in the monastery, you pick the nicest place for the debate ground. I don't know about noise, so we have to see about the how it works out as far as noise. So the motivation is there. You guys have to learn this very well to be able to pass it on to the people in October, okay? And what I wanted to talk about tonight was just where this book came from, Uttara Tantra. And I think the first thing you have to know is that it's not a tantra. Tantra normally means a secret book, or a book in the secret teachings. And Uttara Tantra is not a tantra in that sense. The word tantra means a continuum or a series or a stream. And it comes into English, the tan changes to ten, and it comes into the English as tenuous or tendon. Anything else?
Tenacious.
Yeah, tenacious. Meaning stick with it and even stretch with it. And so all of those words come from the same word as tantra. So tantra means like a series or a stream. And uttara means highest. And you can either say anuttara or uttara, and they mean the same thing. So anuttara means lanamepa, which means nothing higher than that. And uttara means lama. And it's the same lama that means teacher. And it means high, the high one. The high one. So really, Uttara Tantra means the high tantra. And a lot of people have translated it as the sublime tantra or something like that. But the full title is Mahayana Uttara Tantra Shastra. And Mahayana means big capacity. People who are interested in saving every living creature in the universe is Mahayana. And then Shastra, which comes at the end, means a book of instruction. And it ultimately relates to words for cutting. And the word castrate comes from that, meaning you teach by cutting it into divisions and teaching it in divisions. So Shastra means sword, for example. So the full name of the book that you're going to teach people, and that's important to know, right? It can be very embarrassing when they ask you about the title and you don't know. It's Mahayana Uttara Tantra Shastra. And a lot of, it's very confusing why it's called Uttara Tantra. Why is it called the highest tantra if it's not a tantra in the first place? And that comes to the meaning of the word tantra as series or a continuum. So where is the series here? You know, why is it the higher series? And we're going to be studying a commentary by one of the great Tibetan lamas named Gyaltabje, who was a student of Jetsonkapa in the 1400s. And we'll get into that in the first class, because that's all boring historical stuff, and you don't need to know that right now. But he says, Uttara in this case means Chima, and Chima means later. Or I should say latter, the latter part, L-A-T-T-E-R. So he says, it refers to the latter part of a series. And what that means is, it's referring to the latter part of the three great turnings of the wheel by Lord Buddha. So like the wheel of Dharma is being turned today, for the first time, I don't know. You've had classes here already. But the wheel is being turned today. And Lord Buddha turned the wheel three times, very famous three times. And there's this big argument about the last two times, which Winston taught you guys, I think. The last two turnings of the wheel were Mahayana. They were the higher teachings. And so really, this book that we're going to study is an argument between how to interpret the last part of the series, meaning the second and the third turnings of the wheel. And that's why it's called Uttara Tantra. Okay? And very, very, very few people know that. So if people ask you, Uttara doesn't mean sublime or highest tantra. Here it means the latter part of the tantra. And tantra means the series of teachings, those three teachings. So it's a big fight about the second and the third turnings of the wheel, really. Why is there a fight about the second and third turnings of the wheel? I thought you should go back to the author. And this book was written by Maitreya. Okay, and I thought I would tell you the story of how it got written. And then we'll get into the argument in next class. You know, why there's a fight. But it's basically a fight about emptiness. What does emptiness mean? Okay. So it seems there was a monk who lived before 300 AD, okay, and in India. And he was following Chenrai Sikh practice. He was following the secret practice of Chenrai Sikh, which is Avalokiteshvara. That's the loving eyes, the angel who looks with love. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama is believed to be the incarnation of Chenrai Sikh, right? So he was practicing this practice, and then he passed away, and he was reborn during the time of a king named Gambhira Paksha. And he was reborn as a lady, and even from his very early years, her early years, she could remember that she had been a monk before, and she saw that the teachings in India were starting to decline. There were many, many problems. There were military attacks on the Buddhist monasteries, and the government was against Buddhism, and there were many, many problems. So she decided, I have to do something to bring Buddhism back in India. But in those days, it was like really bad for women. And you, even if you became a nun, you wouldn't have any much power to do much. And oral tradition says she was a nun. So she decided to have a few sons, and that she thought she would train them to become pandits, and then they would restore the Mahayana in India. So first she had a son by a kshatriya, which means like a royal family, somebody in a royal family. And she had this vision that if she had a son by somebody in a royal family, that son would come out special. So she had a son. And even as he was born, she was planning his career as a great Mahayana teacher, you know. And just after he was born, she did a special ritual on his tongue. And you draw an A letter on your tongue. I don't know how they do it exactly. Like, I'm still translating that part of that book. And I'll give you the translation in about a week. There are three ancient sources I'm using. They come from the 13th century, the 14th century. And Ellie got them to me a couple days ago. And so that's what I'm using for this teaching. We got them from New York, from Gene Smith. And so she did this special ritual to give him wisdom. And then he grew up and he became very wise. And at some point he asked mom, you know, I was born of a king's race, you know, what kind of job should I get, you know? What are you going to train me for? I should be a prince, right, or something. And she said, no, you're going to be a monk. Which was very unusual in those days, for someone to go from kingly caste to monkly caste. Which monkly caste was no caste, you know. And she said, okay. He said, okay. And so for 5 years he studied. And because he had been because his mother had been a monk in the past, she was able to train him in the, especially in what we call the three baskets, which is, you can think of it as the Hinayana scriptures. And then in much of the Mahayana scriptures. And he became very, very well versed. He was, for 5 years he studied them. And it said that he was able to memorize, how many would it be? What's 100,000 divided by 300? I don't know. Is it 300? Anyway, yeah. He memorized 100,000 verses a year during the 5 years. And he had a really sharp intellect. But there's a story that, you know, he mastered the Hinayana scriptures, the three baskets, and then he mastered the a lot of the Mahayana sutras, but then he ran into the perfection of wisdom. We call the Mother Sutras. And he just couldn't get it. He couldn't get it. Emptiness, you know. He was very frustrated. Like, he couldn't understand emptiness. This is Asanga, right? His name is Asanga. His name in Tibetan is Togme. Asanga, a means not. Sangha means to bump into something. And, or to strike something. Like if my hand was trying to go through the table and it would just stop. That's Asanga. I'm sorry, that's Sangha, okay? It's not the same as the Sangha in Dharma, Sangha, Buddha. But Sangha means to be blocked. And Asanga means he wasn't blocked, which means his intellect was so sharp that it went through stuff like a hot knife through butter. I like to call it hot knife through butter syndrome. But just to try to concentrate on something or think about something, he understood it like that. But when it got to emptiness, when he was trying to understand emptiness, he just came up blank. I don't get it, you know. So I had a teacher that was an expert in Maitreya Tantra, in teaching the Maitreya Tantra. And so apparently he taught him a sadhana, a secret practice about how to reach Maitreya. And they say that during the initiation you have to hand the teacher a flower, and that the flower disappeared and went to Maitreya's heaven. And Maitreya was like, oh wow, this guy's special, you know. So then he decided to go to a cave. It's called Gurupada. It's a special cave in India. And it's said that the last Buddha before this Buddha, whose name is Kashyapa, that he practiced there in that cave. So he went to this cave to practice, and he was going to reach Maitreya, right? He was going to meditate on Maitreya and then reach Maitreya, run into Maitreya, and then maybe become Maitreya, right? So he goes to this cave and he starts practicing. And he does a retreat for 3 years. And after 3 years of hard work, which is very similar to what we did, he doesn't get a single hint, the slightest sign, that anything is happening. Which is very encouraging for us. He doesn't, Maitreya doesn't show up, nothing happens. Okay. So Asanga gets a little upset. Arya, we call him Arya Asanga. And he decided to go home. So there's different stories, but the one I like the best is from the 13th century. It says he came out of the cave and he runs into an old woman. And the old woman has a block of steel. And she's rubbing it with a cotton ball, like that. And he says, what are you doing? You know? And she says, I'm rubbing the block of steel, the cotton ball, obviously, you know. And he says, oh, why are you doing that? She says, I make needles. Yeah, I got like 5 of them I already made, you know. He says, you made those needles by rubbing a block of iron with a cotton ball? He says, yeah, I do. That's what I do. And then he's like, if somebody can have that kind of perseverance, you know, I'm embarrassed, you know. And he turns around and he goes back into the cave, you know. And he tries for 3 more years. And he doesn't get anything, you know. He doesn't see anything at all, you know. No sign of Maitreya, the future Buddha, you know. Not the slightest hint, you know. So he finally decides to give up again, and he leaves the cave. And he's walking down the edge of the stone, and he sees a place where water dripping off the top of the ridge, and it hits a boulder, this big boulder. And the boulder has shattered. The water dripping has split the boulder into like 10 parts, and it's like split, you know, like a grapefruit, you know. And he's looking at this thing going dip, 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 and he says, man, that's perseverance, you know. I gotta keep trying, you know. So he goes back into the cave. And you know the story, he goes another 3 years, which we can appreciate. And he tries really, really hard, and nothing happens. So he comes out again, and he's walking down the path. He gets further down the path, and then he sees this, I don't know how you call it, he sees this streak. I don't know how, it's like a place where the side of the cliff has been cut away in a line. Like there's this line across the side of the cliff. Like a cleft, yeah. And then he sees this bird coming back from hunting for food during the day. And the bird's wing touches the cliff like that. Just touches the cliff like that. And then suddenly he realizes that this cleft has been drawn in the cliff by one bird leaving and just barely touching the cleft, the cliff once a day. And he says, man, that's perseverance, you know. So he goes back into the cave and he meditates for another 3 years. And nothing happens. Nothing at all. So finally he says, I don't care what I see today, I give up, you know. And he gets out of the cave, he goes home, he starts to walk down to the nearest town. Like if you've ever been in the Himalayan foothills, it's like, man, today I'm going to have I'm going to have McDonald's french fry today no matter what, you know. So he just walks to the nearest village, and just outside of the village, it's called Achintya. He comes across, on the side of the road, there's a dog, a she-dog, a dog mother, right? And it's been run over by a cart. And the bottom half of the dog's body is crushed. And it's all been eaten away by maggots. And then they're starting also to crawl up on the head and start to eat the head. And he looks at this dog, you know, and he says, this is terrible, I have to save this dog. If I don't get the maggots off the dog will die. So he kneels down and he starts to try to take the maggots off the dog. And then he realizes if he pulls the maggots off, the maggots will die. So he thinks for a minute and he decides, I'll cut a piece of my own flesh off. I'll cut a piece of my thigh, a big piece of my thigh off. And then I'll transfer all the maggots to the piece of meat from my thigh. And then the dog will survive and the maggots will survive. So they say he went to town and he got a razor blade. And someone loaned him a razor blade. And he came back and he cut a big piece out of his thigh. And he sets it on the ground. And then he goes to pick up one of the maggots. And then he says, I might crush this maggot with my fingers. I better move him with my tongue one by one. Because my tongue is all soft and warm and wet and they'll be comfortable, you know. So but he's kind of grossed out, right? So he's closing his eyes, right? So he closes his eyes and he goes down, he leans over, and he sticks out his tongue, and his tongue hits the ground. And he looks up, he opens his eyes, and there's Maitreya in all his glory, the future Buddha, you know, shining. And it's a very, very beautiful exchange in the scripture, in the history books. Asanga looks at Maitreya and says, it's kind of odd, you know. A man was asking for a glass of water for 12 years, and then you throw the ocean down from the sky. You know, all I wanted was one look at you. You just could have, a minute, you could have shown yourself, you know. And 12 years you let me work. Now you're standing here, you know, like 100% you're here, you know. Why didn't you just give me some little sign that I was doing okay, you know? Why didn't you show me anything for 12 years, and now you're just overflowing with glory, you know? And Maitreya says, you're the crazy one. I was there all the time in the cave, you know? You couldn't see me. He says, you weren't in the cave. I was there 12 years, I was trying to find you. You weren't in the cave. He says, I was in the cave, you know? And so, then he quotes, Maitreya quotes this book that says, if your mind's not pure enough, you can't see an angel. I mean, you can be sitting next to her. There's a joke in Tibetan, they say, a Sangha used to clear his throat and spit, and then Maitreya was trying to dodge the spit all the time. Maitreya says, I spent 12 years dodging your spit, you know? Don't tell me I wasn't in the cave. And a Sangha says, yeah, I don't believe you're in the cave, you know. I don't believe, it sounds nice, you know. If you have a pure mind, you can see angels. If you don't see them. I know. People say that. That's the emptiness of angels, right? And Asanga says, I don't buy it, you know. So my trainer says, well, we'll do a little experiment, okay? You pick me up on your shoulders. I'll ride you piggyback. And you run around the town of Achintya, right? And you tell me what happens, okay? So he says, great. So he gets my trainer up on his back. And he runs through town, you know. I got my trainer on my back, my trainer on my back. Everybody, nobody sees anything. They say Asanga went crazy in that cave, 12 years. He's running around town swearing there's some angel on his back. There ain't nothing on his back. Nobody saw anything. Okay. So my trainer's like, I told you so. You know. And then one lady, she's a barmaid. She saw a puppy on Asanga's shoulder. She says, I see a puppy. I don't see my trail, but I see a puppy on your shoulder, you know. And then there was what we call a coolie in India, the guy that shows up at the bus station and carries your trunk for 6 miles on his back. And he saw my trail's toe, just the toe hanging there. I see a toe. And they say he achieved some high tantric level from that. The barmaid became a rich woman and spent the rest of her life in comfort by seeing the puppy. And so it was proven to Asanga that if you're not pure enough, if you don't try hard enough, you can be sitting with a bunch of angels and you don't see anything. Or you might see regular people. You just might see plain old regular people because your mind's not pure enough. He says the 12 years in the cave was working. Every day was working. And then you were able to see me. And then you had the compassion to try to save the dog and the maggot. And so that's how you saw me. And that's why you can see me now. And so you shouldn't think the 12 years was wasted. Every day you were getting closer and closer. And you succeeded. So then Maitreya says to his son, you want pizza or a story? Little story. But it looks awful good. My trainer says, well, what can I do for you, by the way? You know, why were you trying to reach me for 12 years? And then Asanga says, look, I've been, you know, my mom wants me to spread the Mahayana, and I read all those books, I get all of them, but when it comes to emptiness, I just don't get it, you know? I just don't get it. I don't get the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras, you know? My trainer says, no problem. Grab onto my robe, you know, but hold on tight to my robe, you know. And then he holds on tight and then boom, they go to Maitreya's heaven, which is called Tushita, or Gandan, right? And it's morning, it's mid-morning. I mean, you can imagine it here, right? And the light is coming down and it's morning time. And so in the space of like 45 minutes, Maitreya teaches a Sangha, Arya Sangha, the entire Mahayana scriptures, okay, and all the Perfection of Wisdom, and he throws in all the Hinayana scriptures at the same time. And then he says, is that good enough, you know, do you get it? He says, I got it, you know. And then Asanga says, but could you like write something a little shorter than those 8,000 or 20,000 or 100,000 verse scriptures? Could you write something like shorter for people to use, like maybe I could take it back with me, you know. So Asanga says, okay, I'm sorry, Maitreya. And then Maitreya says, you know what, people in your world, they're not even as smart as you are. So if I write something about, if I write some explanation of emptiness, they're not going to get it. So I'll tell you what, I'll write 5 short books, and they'll be, one by one, they'll be more and more clear. They go from easy emptiness up to advanced emptiness, right? So he taught him what we call the Namjen Yi, Gen Yi, and then Gyu Lama. Just say for good luck, okay? Namjen Yi, Gen Yi, Gilama. Okay. Namjinyi means the two vibhanga. Vibhanga means distinguishing between two things. Namjin means distinguishing between two things. So two of the five books are called distinguishing between two things. The first one is called Uta Namje. Uta Namje means dividing the middle from the extremes, like middle way from the two extremes. How do you stay in a good vision of emptiness and karma and not go to either extreme? That book was about that. And it's mind-only school, which means like a lower school about emptiness. Okay. Then he taught him what we call Chodan Shunyin Namje, which means Dharma Dharma Tavibhanga, and it means how do you distinguish between things and the emptiness of things? How do you distinguish between things and their true nature? And that book is a little bit more advanced, but it's still mind-only. It's still mind-only school. Then he taught him the Genyi. Genyi means the two ornaments. The first one is Dode Gen, which means the ornament of the sutras, the jewel of the sutras. This book is still mind-only, but it's even more advanced. Okay. Then he taught him Avisama Alankara Ngundo Gen, which means the ornament of realizations. When you enter a Gelugpa monastery, you study this, one of the great three monasteries. We studied that for 12 years. The first 12 years is studying this 50-page book. That's how long it takes to figure out what Maitreya said to a Sangha. Okay. That's the first book of the five, which is Majjhimika. That book is middle way. But it's sort of a lower presentation of middle way. Okay. So you can see that there's a series going on, right? Like five books. And now we're going to talk about the highest one in the series. So what would you name the book? Uttara Tantra. You see? The end of the series. It's like the last game of the World Series, you see? It's like the most important of the five books. Or the most advanced viewpoint in the five books. It's called Gyulama. So there you see Uttara Tantra means the end of the series. So it can even mean series in the sense of the three turnings of the wheel, or series in the sense of the five books. But the last and final book is called Uttara Tantra. Shastra, meaning the explanation of the latter part of the series. Okay? So he taught him these five books and he sends him back to Earth. He sends him back to Earth with these five books, right? And then a Sangha goes out to this very isolated place in India that they're thinking about building a monastery there, but there's nothing there yet, or some kind of Buddhist university, really. And he just goes out to this empty place and he has eight students with him, just eight really good students. And he spends several years teaching them the five books. And he goes through the five books with them. Do you want more story or you want pizza? I'm running. Who said pizza?
You want pizza.
Nah, I don't want pizza. So I'll tell you the last part of his story. A Sangha teaches his eight beautiful students, really, really fine students, and they just do it out in the middle of nowhere. There's nobody out there, and they go through the five books, and he teaches it to them really, really well. Then he decides, we got to have some kind of formal university here or something. We should expand this place. But we're going to need money. I mean, assume they had ordered land, I guess. So he goes to this king, the king of the local, it was near Ayodhya in India, which is north, it's not far from Shravasti, where Buddha taught the diamond cutter. And he goes to the palace of this king named Gambhira Paksha. And he wants to approach the king for funding to make a bigger place for people to study. Okay? And the king says, I've been hearing stuff about this Asanga. He's been doing like minor miracles. And I think he's a fake. So he asks his ministers, what's the best way to expose this guy? And they said, well, we have an idea. We'll give him several tests, and if he can figure them out, then he must be okay. He must be a real saint, you know. So the king does two things. He gets a black cow and he whitewashes him head to foot. We can try it someday. Then he gets a golden urn, a golden vase, and he fills it with snot and mucus and poo-poo and pee-pee and all kinds of gross stuff. And then the last inch he fills with honey, you know. Then he has these two things in his palace, right? And he calls Arya and Sangha in. And they say, he says, do you see anything unusual in the room, you know? And Asanga says, well, it's kind of weird to paint a black cow white just to see if I can't recognize if he's black. And I sure wouldn't eat what's in that, I sure wouldn't drink what's in that urn, you know. So then the king is like, anybody could have figured that kind of stuff out. So he mentally frames six questions. In his mind, he frames six questions for Asanga. But he doesn't ask him. He just beams it. He just let's see if he can read my mind. He says he can read people's minds, you know. So he asks him six questions about emptiness, or about the meaning of the scriptures on the Prajnaparamita, the perfection of wisdom. Because this king believed in the perfection of wisdom, and every day he had somebody reciting the scriptures to him. But he had questions. Three questions about the words, three questions about the meaning. I don't think I'll go into all of them. Maybe you want to do it? I'll do it real brief, okay?
Is this still good?
I think the ants are going to get it before I do. Okay. Motivation. No, I'm just kidding. Maybe offer. Can you offer? I don't know if I remember them. Let me think. And they're very obscure. They're very obscure questions. The first, the king says, look, there's a quotation in the Perfection of Wisdom. It says the word bodhisattva is really just a word for something else. Isn't it? Somebody asked Lord Buddha. And then Lord Buddha said, don't ask me about bodhisattvas, you can't see them. Okay. And then the king's question is that Lungmaten? Lungmaten means there's 14 famous questions that Lord Buddha refused to answer. Like people said, is there an end to samsara? And Lord Buddha said, I can't tell you. So people went away and they said, Lord Buddha doesn't know. And then his disciples said, why did you say you didn't know? Why did you say you can't tell them, right? And he says, if I say there is, they'll misunderstand it. If I say there isn't, they'll misunderstand it. Because they take it as self-existent. They don't understand that this world is coming from your own mind. They're asking me about a world that doesn't come from your own mind. So if I agree or I disagree, I'm wrong either way. So I didn't answer. So the king's mental question to Arya Sangha is that one of those questions? You know, why did Lord Buddha say, you can't even see bodhisattvas? You know, and then Arya Sangha says, oh, he's just talking about emptiness. It's a kind of emptiness, inner emptiness. The emptiness inside you. Okay? And so he finishes that question. And the king hears it in his own mind. So he's getting this... I'm sorry, I think Asanga actually spoke about... The king says, the scriptures say that there's a bird that has wings that cover 500 yojana. Yojana is a mile and a half, so 750 mile wings. Wingspan. What's that mean? And Arya Sangha says, you've got to have a lot of virtue. Okay, it means you got to have a lot of virtue. I think I really did forget the third one. I'll give them to you later. I'll give you the whole six on the first class. It's a reason to come to the first class. Okay. But anyway, I remember the first of the last three is, does the foundation storehouse consciousness exist or not? And, because this is the big fight. This is the big fight. And this you have to know between the mind-only school and the emptiness, the Madhyamika school, right? There's a big argument about what does emptiness mean. And if you get it, then you understand emptiness. And if you don't get it, you don't understand emptiness, right? And so Lord Buddha taught emptiness two different ways. And one of them is not completely wrong, but it's wrong. And the other way is right. And then somebody has to come along and figure out which one is wrong and which one is right. And that's Master Asanga. That's what Asanga's job was, right? He goes to Maitreya's heaven. Maitreya teaches him 5 books. 3 of them teach emptiness the wrong way. 2 of them teach emptiness the right way. So what's Arya Sangha stuck with? What's his job when he gets back to Earth? He's got to figure it out. He's got to figure it out. I mean, he's coming back for all humanity. I went to Maitreya's heaven. I finally saw Maitreya. I got Maitreya to show himself to me. I'm going to teach you what Maitreya said. And then Maitreya teaches him 2 opposite things. You know? So here's Arya Sangha in this trouble. He's in trouble. He's come back to Earth. He's going to teach the 5 books. And they're split 3 against 2. You know? So his whole life is spent struggling with this question, you know? What does emptiness really mean? I think Maitreya didn't help him at all. He still had to come back and figure it out, right? He still had to come back and decide, which books did Maitreya really mean when he was saying? Which books did Maitreya talk about that he didn't really mean what he was saying? Okay? And that's a big, big subject of the Uttara Tantra, okay? The most important subject in the Uttara Tantra, this is for Gail, okay? Is what we call Sugatagarbha, which is your own Buddha nature, the Buddha inside of you, okay? What is the nature of the Buddha inside of you? Some of you are studying a book by an early Karmapa, and there's a big argument in there already, right? About what is the nature of the Buddha who's inside of you, you know? If Lord Buddha said there's a Buddha inside of you, what's that Buddha like? What's that Buddha look like? And in the beginning, Maitreya teaches Arya Sangha, it's a certain quality that you have. Or maybe there's already a Buddha inside of you and you just have to reveal it, right? And that's what Buddha nature is. That's what your Buddha nature is, right? Then halfway through the lesson, Maitreya says, no, I didn't mean that. Your Buddha nature is something else. Your emptiness is your Buddha nature. It's not something you have, it's something you don't have. Okay? Your Buddha nature is the fact that you don't have something. And that's what means you can become a Buddha. It's not that there's a Buddha living inside of you or anything like that. Okay? So then this huge argument starts. Instead of helping to clarify things, Maitreya starts a big argument that has gone on for 1600 years now. Okay? And I'll close with the following thing, okay? There's a book called Manjushri Mula Tantra, which means the secret book in which Manjushri's secret teachings are given. The root secret teachings of Manjushri are given in this book. In that book it says that there will be a man, an Arya named Nagarjuna, and he will be born 400 years after Lord Buddha. And he will clarify the middle way. But then after him will come an Arya called the Sangha. And he will finally be able to figure out the things I meant when I said them and the things I didn't mean when I said them. Okay? And that's Arya Sangha's big job, is Chang'e. Okay? Winston's favorite subject. How do you know when Lord Buddha meant what he said? And how do you know when Lord Buddha didn't mean what he said? Especially about emptiness. And then what it does is it clarifies our own understanding of emptiness. So that's basically the story how it started. The king was so impressed by his answers, he gave him lots of money. First he started with small dharma centers. Each one had 20 people all over that state. And then it got bigger and bigger, and then the king funded these big extension universities all over the country. And eventually, this all happened even in Kashmir, in India. And eventually, this whole Mahayana teaching spread throughout the whole countryside of India. And there were centers spread everywhere, and there was a big central university where people came to study seriously. And then they went home and started smaller branch universities all over their country. So I thought it might be auspicious, since we're here for the first night at Diamond Mountain Buddhist university room. And I thought it would be very auspicious. Arya Sangha lived to be over 90. But they say he never got old. He didn't look older. Because what happened when he went to Tushita, one morning passed, right? In Tushita. 50 human years passed. He came back, all his friends were already dead. And he didn't age that much after that experience. And they say still he had marks on his body like that you see on a Buddha. That even after the age of 90. Towards the end of his life, he became the head of Nalanda Monastery. So that's the story of Asanga. We have to talk about his brother someday, Vasubandhu. But I think we'll have pizzas now. So I thought it was very auspicious that the future Buddha, we should speak about the future Buddha today. Maitreya is the coming Buddha, the next Buddha. And we'll come into this world within 500 years. Less than 500 years, maybe very fast. Okay. Purge Jashin Dodam Re Ram Ling Shi De Gambadi Sange Shindu Mide Uwagi Dokunanda Shinna Chibashu Iram Guru Rana Mandala Yatayami Kewadi kewogan sanam yishe tozoshin sanam yishe nechule dambakuni tobashun.